Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening and watching the Italian-American Entertainment Podcast. I'm your host, Vince Shirelli, and today we have the very talented singer, actor, and overall entertainment legend, Bobby Rydell. His career has encompassed six decades and counting, and Bobby first found success as a teen idol, selling over 25 million records. He went on to star on television, stage, and film, and is now the author of a best-selling autobiography, Bobby Rydell, Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances. So welcome, Mr. Bobby Rydell. How are you?
I'm fine, Vinny. How about yourself?
Hanging in there. And where are you located right now? I'm in the cold up here in Illinois. So where?
Well, I'm in the cold, too. We're right in Philadelphia. Yeah, we're in the cold and snow and so on and so forth.
It's been pretty tough. But so how I usually start this, since it's about Italian-Americans and the entertainment world, and you are Italian, where in Italy do you trace your ancestry?
My mother's mom and dad came from Abruzzi.
Okay.
And yeah, and my father's mother and father came from Provincia di Pesaro, which is in Marche, right off of the Adriatic Sea.
Okay.
And my father's first name, my grandfather named him Adrio, after the Adriatic Sea.
Oh, wow. That's a cool name. I never heard that one before.
Yeah.
So, and many people don't realize that, as did a lot of people in that era, in those decades, you changed your name to Rydell. So what is your actual Italian last name?
Ridarelli.
Okay.
Well. Ridarelli. Roberto Luigi Ridarelli.
Well, we're in the Ellie Club, I guess, because my last name ends with Ellie too. So.
Right. LLI.
There we go.
You're right.
So, getting into your music world, there's a lot to talk about, but we'll start with the music. So, when did you start performing music, and what was your main motivation to get into music?
It was all because of my dad. If I had any talent in me whatsoever, my dad saw it at a very early age, like 7 years old to be exact. And he used to take me around to nightclubs when I was 7, 8 years old. He would ask the club owner, is it okay if my son got up to sing a few songs and do some impersonations? And I would do that and people would applaud. I was like 7, 8 years old. I said, wow, all I have to do is do this and they do that. What a wonderful feeling. So that was my indoctrination, you know, to what later became my professional career in show business. It was all because of my dad.
Wow, that's amazing. And one of my questions, and we'll kind of go into that now, was, you know, coming from an Italian family, we all know how strict they can be. So I wanted to know, were your parents supportive of music, which you just said they were, or did they want you to go into a different path? So it sounds like
No. Matter of fact, my mother used to say to my father, my father's nickname was Ott, after the baseball player Mel Ott.
Oh, okay.
And she would say to him, Ott, what are you doing with the kid? You know, why are you taking him around to these nightclubs? And my father would say, Jenny, he's got talent. And my mother would say, well, what else are you going to say? You're the father, you know. But no, you know, at 10 years old, I was on a show called the Paul Whiteman TV Teen Club. I won on the show at doing a record that Sammy Davis Jr. recorded years ago to the song of Because of You.
Okay.
And one side he did singers doing actors, and the other side he did actors doing singers to the tune of Because of You. I did the side of actors doing singers, people like James Cagney, you know, Edward G. Robinson, Jerry Lewis, and I won on the show. So, you know, they were most, you know, they were behind me, you know, especially my dad, you know, like 1,000%.
Wow, that's great. That's great. So so you hit it pretty big in the music world, of course. And so we know so many budding young musicians and singers who would have loved to have some hit songs in their lifetime, but you were able to achieve, you know, multiple hits. So what was it like for you to have so many hit songs, sell millions of records, but at such a young age?
Well, I mean, of course, it felt absolutely wonderful. But getting back to what I said earlier about my dad taking me around to clubs, you know, at a very early age, it kind of was like my vaudeville. And it kind of got me ready for things that were going to happen later on in my career, in my life. And when things started happening for me, I think it all relates back to, once again, my dad, who took me around to clubs when I was like 7, 8 years old. And of course, you know, the feeling was absolutely wonderful, but I was kind of like almost geared for it. I was ready, you know, for something like that.
Wow. So were your parents first generation Italian Americans? Did they immigrate themselves or was it your grandparents?
My grandparents, my mom's mom and dad, my dad's mom and dad. Yeah.
Okay. So growing up in that Italian, family, were you brought up on the old school, you know, Italian music, you know, O Sole Mio, all the old stuff? And did you have like a big Italian American influence that really influenced you in the music world?
Not really all that much. My grandfather, my mother's father, from what I understand, prior to coming over from the old country, he was like in some kind of Italian vaudeville. And my grandfather used to sing in the house. He used to love to dance, you know, in the house. And really, that's about it. I mean, other than that, I mean, the music that I listened to when I was very, very young, my dad, when I was 5 years old, took me to see the Benny Goodman Orchestra. Okay. And I didn't know who Benny Goodman was, but my father wanted to introduce me to big band music. And I fell in love with it, you know, immediately at 5 years old. And there was one guy in the band who I said, I don't know who he is, Daddy, but he was the drummer. I said, and I want to be that guy. Hmm. And his name was Gene Krupa.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Gene Krupa?
Yeah.
And I started playing drums at 5 years old. Wow. So the music that I listened to was like big band and jazz.
Wow.
The only, you know, we really didn't listen to too many Italian tunes in the family for some reason or another. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. So so you're still in your teens and you come up for the part of Hugo Peabody for Bye Bye Birdie. So how did it feel to be a simultaneous teen idol in music and now also in film? And also in a film that became Academy Award nominated. How was that at, you know, in your teen life?
Oh, my God. It was absolutely wonderful, Vince. When I went out to California to screen test, I screen tested with Anne Margaret for the director, George Sidney. And prior to going out there, I went to see the play of Bye Bye Birdie. And my part... in the play, I mean, Hugo Peabody didn't sing, didn't dance, had practically no dialogue whatsoever. When I screen tested with Anne, Mr. Sidney said, thank you ever so much, you know, we'll be in touch. 2 weeks later, I got a call to go out to do the part of Hugo Peabody. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I just saw the stage play and, you know, Hugo Peabody didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Sidney saw some kind of magic between Anne Margaret and myself. And every day that I went back to the studio, my script got bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, to the point where the singing was involved, the dialogue was involved, and the dancing was involved. I've never been a motion picture star, but if there was one movie to be, you know, associated with, I was very, very happy, you know, to be associated with Bye Bye Birdie because it is a classic.
Yeah, no, it is. And so this, you know, my wife and I were talking about this morning, actually, about, you know, being a teen idol in the 50s and 60s. And even though it must have been difficult for all teen idols, you know, especially at that time, how do you think social media and other mediums that we have today, would have affected you as a teen idol if you were, you know, take reverse roles and now you were a teen idol?
Yeah, right. Wow, that's a good question. I really don't know. I mean, I look at somebody like a Justin Bieber, you know, mm-hmm. who was, I don't know, 14 years old or 15 something. and his mother put him on YouTube.
Yep.
And overnight, he became a sensation and started making all kinds of money. I mean, money that was extraordinary for a 14, 15-year-old. And, you know, I guess that was, you know, kind of hard to handle, you know, being thrown into the spotlight at a very, very early age and to be making the money that he was making. We didn't have that back then. You know, we didn't have the social media.
Right.
What we did, you know, we call it like woodshedding and paying your dues, you know, to be able to do what I have accomplished so far in my career.
Sure. So the musical Grease comes along and
right.
They name the school after you, Rydell High. So was that something that you knew about beforehand?
No, I didn't
told
no.
you about? Okay.
No, I knew nothing about it. And, you know, of course, when the movie came out and my dear friend, who I've known since I was 10 years old, he was 12. We lived right around the corner from one another in South Philadelphia. It was Frankie Avalon,
okay.
whose real name is Avalone.
Sure.
And I went to see the movie and there was Rydell High with the red banners and Rydell written, you know, in white embroidery. And I said, wow, you know, what a tribute, you know, why Nate? Could have been Anchor High, could have been Fabian High, could have been Presley High, you know. But
right.
they picked me for some reason, and my God, truly an honor.
No, it is. That's amazing. It's a cool story, too, that you really were surprised about it. So that's very cool.
yeah, so, really. You know, a lot of the young kids who don't know me, but they know Grease.
Oh, yeah.
And when they hear Bobby Rydell, oh, that's the guy who had the high school in Greece.
Exactly. Yep. So speaking of Frankie Avalon, so you still, probably not now because of COVID, but you still
right.
were touring solo and with Frankie and Fabian as part of the Golden Boys. So
correct.
How
is, yeah.
So how is that show? And, you know, how is it to work with some of your old-time friends?
Oh, well, absolutely. It was wonderful. We started the show back in 1985. And the three of us got on the phone and talked to one another. Hey, would you like to do, and Frank and Fabe and Bob, you know, and we all said, hey, that sounds like it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. So we got together, we put a show together, we rehearsed the show, and it was a tremendous success. We did something like 45 to 60 one-nighters back in 1985
wow.
to SRO audiences, was sold out. And it was a great show. It was a fun show. I mean, the three of us had been in the business for quite a few years. We weren't trying to prove anything to anybody. We just wanted the audience to have fun.
Sure.
Like we were having fun on stage. And I turned to Frankie, who I called Cheech, you know, an Italian Frank. I said, yo, Cheech, I said, this is wonderful. But how long is this going to last? A year, 2 years tops, and it's over. That was 1985. It's now 2021. We're still doing the show.
That's
and
amazing.
It's better today than it was back in 1985. Yeah.
That's amazing and really shows your staying power and that you guys still have it. After
I
all
guess.
Years. You know, the nostalgic thing is coming back. You know, I'm 30 years old, but I still love, even my wife, I have a four-year-old. And all we play is 50s, 60s music, and he loves it and dances
good
around.
For you. Good
so,
for you,
I mean,
Vince.
It's sticking around. It's got staying power, that's for
well,
sure.
Well, I mean, at least you can listen to the lyrics and understand them. What do you have today? You start playing things, you don't know what the hell's going on. Do you, right? I mean, my God.
Exactly. So this might be a hard question, but, you know, you've played probably all over the world, everywhere. And do you have a favorite festival or venue or, you know, something that sticks out in your head that you really love playing that place?
Outside of the United States of America, God bless us all, my favorite place to work is Australia. I've been down there something like 22, 23 times since 1960 was my first appearance
oh.
there. And the Australian people are just absolutely wonderful. And they kind of like took me under their skin, you know, because I had been there like so many times. They said, oh my God, mate, he's practically Australian, you know. And it's just a wonderful country. The people are great. They truly love Americans. The music down there is phenomenal. they had some phenomenal artists, you know, in Australia. And the weather is always great. The food is absolutely wonderful. So I would venture to say outside of the good old USA, Australia is one of my favorite places to entertain.
That's cool. I hear, you know, what's interesting, you know, outside of the music world, I've interviewed a lot of Italian-American comedians. And Italian-American comedy is huge out in Australia because a lot of Italians actually immigrated to Australia.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Oh, there's quite a few Italians. Yeah, there's quite a few Italians in Australia.
Yeah, so it's pretty
amazing.
I mean,
you can go from the East Coast to the West Coast, from Sydney to Perth, you know, and you'll find a lot of, you know, Goombas all over the place, you know. Goombas and Paisans.
I just don't know if I could handle the airplane ride. That's a pretty long trip.
Well, yeah. Years ago, like back in 1960, we flew 707s.
Right.
And you would leave LA and you would stop in Hawaii and you would stop in Fiji to refuel.
Wow.
So that kind of broke up, you know, the flight. You would go through the transit and, you know, at least stretch your legs. Now, the past couple of times that I've been down there, last time was 2015, you know, you're flying on an Airbus 380, and it's 15 hours and 40 minutes direct from LA to Sydney. But, you know, what is so great about it, you know, flying on business class, you have the seats that open up and you sleep.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you're in the air like an hour. After about an hour, hour and a half, dinner is served. So you have your dinner, you watch maybe a movie, two movies, and then you go to sleep.
Yeah.
And by the time you know it, the purser's coming around. He says, "Would you like some breakfast, mate?" You know, and you're like an hour out of Sydney. So it's not really all that bad, you know.
Yeah.
It's not all that bad.
Yeah, yeah. So what does Bobby Rydell listen to today in music? Is there you listen to oldies or do you have like a favorite new artist?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
When I'm in my car, I first put on WIP, and that's sports talk radio. I want to see what the Phillies, the Flyers, the Sixers, the Eagles, you know, so on are doing. Then after I get my fill of that, I'll put on Seriously Sinatra and listen to the old man for a while. And then I'll go to 50s on 5, 60s on 6, you know, and just to hear the old, you know, the old music. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's all I listen to. I got Sirius XM, 60s. My son knows, he tells me to go to the Beatles channel all the time. He likes the Beatles at that. And I was going to ask you, too. I was just reading this. So is this a true story that... She Loves You by the Beatles might have been influenced by one of your songs. Is that true?
You know what? I don't know if it was everybody kind of thought that it came from Swingin' School. Yay, 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 I go with Swingin' School. But then I heard something about McCartney, and my last million seller was a song called Forget Him.
Okay.
Forget him if he doesn't love you. So they wrote a tune called She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. So I don't know if it was Swingin' School, but I got to take it for granted that it was McCartney who said, no, it was Forget Him.
Hmm,
She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool story. And, you know, with you being, you know, such an idol in the late 50s, 60s, and what were your thoughts when the British invasion started happening, you know, mid-60s?
Well, like everybody else, you know, Vinny, a lot of the disc jockeys, you know, across the United States just were playing British music for quite a few years. And then I think they all of a sudden had a brain fart, you know, and they said, hey, wait a minute, let's get back to playing American music once again.
Right.
You know, so, look at what's happening today. You got the hip-hop, you got the rap, you know. So you roll with the punches, you know, do what you do, and then you throw enough stuff against the wall and something's got to stick. And I've been in the business for going on to 61 years now, so I must be doing something right.
Exactly, yes, exactly, you must be. So, you know, I'm a young musician. I've been playing since, you know, very young, and my grandfather was an Italian musician, and, you know, kind of the way your father was to you, my grandfather, you know, was more of a regional guy here in the Midwest.
Well, what instrument do you play, Vin?
I'm the singer and the guitar player, so I'm the lead singer in the band.
Oh, very good. Very good.
What advice would you have for, you know, someone like me or other people trying to follow in your footsteps?
The advice that I would give is just to work at your craft, nurture your craft as best as you could, and work as much as you possibly could. I don't care if you're making like $2 a night, you know, just to go in and work in front of a live audience to get what kind of, you know, what kind of a feel you're getting, you know, from the audience, because they can tell you right away, boo, you stink, or hey, yeah, you know. So I would just say, you know, to keep on working and just nurture your craft for as long as you possibly can and fine tune it.
Yeah. One of the best pieces of advice my grandfather ever gave me, he, you know, he came to the country from Sicily with nothing and went right into music, but he was a tailor. And so all his tailoring money went to fund his music love. And he used to go to Nashville, and, you know, he was with a lot of people. He actually tried to be a singer kind of in that era. He had broken English, so he was doing the Italian stuff. But
I didn't know there were a lot of Italians in Nashville.
No, he was really one of the only ones. He changed his name to the Italian Country Boy to try to fit in with the country thing. And actually, two of the songs that he wrote were his biggest hits were country songs. And most money he ever made, and he didn't even speak really English, but he wrote two country songs. So it's kind of funny how
that's amazing. That's so cool.
But one of the big pieces of advice he gave me, and I'm glad I followed it, especially with the way COVID's destroying a lot of the music industry, is he always said, have a insurance policy for your life. So get a degree in something you can fall back on, because you never know. And I'm glad I got my master's in accounting, because it's tough right now, you know, being a musician. You know, we were playing 100 dates a year with my band, and, you know, now it's zero. It's amazing how it's just crippled the music industry.
My last engagement was last March, like the 14th. But I think things are starting to turn around, because I leave for Florida March the 17th. I fly to Orlando, and we do 2 days at a place called the Claremont Performing Arts Center.
Sure, yeah.
On the 18th and the 19th. So maybe things are starting to open up. You know, I've had so many dates that have either been canceled or postponed. You know, they're still on, you know, on the book, you know, as far as Bobby Rydell's tour dates, but they have been moved.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's tough.
But hopefully, you know, as things go on, hopefully by springtime, things will start changing and more venues will start opening up again.
I hope so. And
one
of my final questions for you, I ask this to everybody on the show, since it's about Italian American entertainment. What is your hope for the future of Italian American entertainment? And do you have a good feeling that there's others like us, Italian-Americans, that will be continuing Italian-American music and the culture within the United States?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, 1,000%. I mean, if you really want to stop and look at it, 99% of singers are Italian and 1% are Jewish. the comedians, you know.
Right.
You got most of the comedians are Jewish and most of the singers are Italian.
That's true.
So I think the future looks pretty bright for us Italian Americans.
I hope so. And I'm seeing, you know, like I said, I'm 30 years old, but I'm seeing a lot of younger my age really coming out, you know, now the past couple years, and really focusing more on that culture and, you know, keeping the Italian American thing going. Mostly what my band used to play is the Italian festivals. So we travel the country, and, you know, I'd see. You know, it's getting younger and younger, which is good.
You were from? Chicago?
Chicago area. So Rockford, Illinois.
Okay, Rockford, Illinois. Well, we used to do the Italian festival there. It was like near Soldiers Field. There was a big Italian
So there's
Outdoor Festival.
So yeah, there's Taylor Street Fest in Chicago. That's a big one. And a guy named Ron Onesti also runs the Arcade.
Oh, I know Ron. Yeah, Ron very well.
Yeah, yeah. Ron's a good friend of mine too. He's been on this show. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's only about 45 minutes from where I live. He has the theater, and then he does a couple Italian.
Well,
festivals.
I've done his theater.
Oh,
I've done his theater, and we're on the books to do it again.
Good.
Once again, it's been postponed, you know, two times already. But sure. That's a wonderful theater to work, the Arcana Theater.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
He's a great guy to work for.
He is. He's done a lot to help me get my start, you know, now 12 years ago, getting me into Italian festivals and things. So he's a great
guy.
That's
wonderful. That's great, man.
Yeah, so before we go, I know it's tough right now, like we said, with COVID about upcoming dates. But how do people find out more about your dates, if you got any tour dates, and also the book that you released, your autobiography?
Yeah, well, as far as the tour dates and my book is concerned, you just go to bobbyridell.com and you'll see tours, right? And then merchandise. Now, under the merchandise, you can get like hats that say Volare. Okay. Coffee mugs with my picture on there, and the book is on there as well. Bobby Rydell, Teenage Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances, a book that I'm very, very proud of. And so that's how they can, you know, find out where I'm going to be working. And if they want to buy the book, bobbyrydell.com.
Perfect. Well, I'll include links to all that on this, on the video and on the audio podcast, so people can find out more and get your book and anything else and listen to your music. It's great music. I was listening to Wild One with my son, and he's a wild one, so he really liked it. So we're trying to calm him down. He's at that age, 4 years old. He won't
stop.
Oh,
wow. So. What do you expect?
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. But once again, I really appreciate you coming on, and it was an honor talking to you, and it's great, another great Italian-American in the music industry. And really appreciate that, especially you're still going. That's amazing. So,
well, grazie, Vincenzo.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Italian American Entertainment Podcast. And we'll catch you next time. Thank you.